Hello and welcome to the Kotaku Split Screen Podcast, a podcast where we attack video games one very specific topic at a time. I am one of your hosts, Michael Fahey, senior reporter for Kotaku.com. I am joined, as always, by senior reporter Nathan Grayson. Say hello, Nathan.
Hi.
I said
it's
hello.
It's me, Nathan.
Hello.
No, I don't take orders.
God.
I'm an iconoclast.
Damn it. Ashley and Ashley, our junior cover reporter. Wait, no, let's give her a better title this time.
Oh, man. Do we get to come up with one on the spot? Like, are we ideating?
Ace investigative reporter Ashley Parrish.
I would play that Phoenix Wright game.
There you go.
That'd actually be really good.
And you don't even have to say hello because they've heard you already.
They have a little bit of that in Ace Attorney Investigations where you pal around with Edgeworth. But yeah, I would play an investigative reporter video game that was in the model of Ace Attorney.
If you were starring in it?
If I were starring in it, yeah.
Do you think game would win an award?
Yes, it would win an award for best performance by, I don't know.
By
a gay lawyer. Yeah, by me.
Best by performance. A gay lawyer.
Oh. Anyway, this week's theme is awards. It's award season. It's time when we give out arbitrary little statues to video games, even though they've already made their money. Yeah, because they need little statues to put in their lobbies. It's very important. And we're going to get started right off the bat here with a segment that Nathan Grayson likes to call a segment.
Yeah. I think we call it speed run these days, but
the award-winning speed run segments.
Yeah, all of our segments are award-winning mm-hmm. now, by the way.
Yes.
We can just give
all
the
awards ourselves. Yeah.
Made them out of tinfoil. Took a lot of work. Anyway, so yeah, for our first segment, we're going to dig into the history of video game award shows because there have been a great many. And I think all of them, or at least most of them, have kind of come at it from the angle of how do we make the Oscars, but for video games? And the answer in almost every case has been poorly. We do it very poorly. Aww. So yeah, it's a really, I did a lot of research last night. It is a fascinating history full of just really unflattering moments. So the short version is that it began, awards for video games, I guess, more or less began in 1979, which is quite a while ago at this point, with Electronic Games Magazine, who just, you know, did awards in their magazine.
1979?
Yep, 79. This should give you an idea of when that was. One of their real award categories was Best Pong Variant.
Oh, remember when we had the conversation where every video game was Pong?
I know.
Holy shit.
In my notes, I have another glimpse into the alternate reality Fahey nearly imagined into existence.
Oh, goodness.
That's funny. Yeah. So what won Best Pong Variant? You got Can't Keep Us Hanging.
Oh, man. I already closed that Wikipedia window. Do I really have to open it again?
You can't just dangle that in front of our faces without telling us.
The reason why I didn't include it is because it's some game that no one's heard of. Here, let me go up to it. Let's see. Best Pong Variant in 1979 went to Video Olympics for the Atari VCS.
I know Video Olympics. I do know that.
See?
Wow.
See, I'm an old person. In 1979, I was 6.
Huh. Mm-hmm. How exciting.
Really?
Yeah,
the way
yeah.
time works.
Anyway, so the first actual show was the Golden Joysticks, which began in 1983. And the first one was hosted by a BBC DJ named Dave Lee Travis, who, fun fact, briefly went to prison in 2014 for indecent assault, was originally born of 12 different counts of sexual offense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait.
Anyway.
No. What is indecent assault? Is that a British thing?
Yeah. I mean,
does that mean you assault someone and you're naked?
Probably okay. Something along those lines. But anyway, despite
that, he hit me with a baseball bat, but his dick was out. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you nailed it, Fahey. That was it. He handed somebody an award and then just went from there. So yeah, despite that inauspicious beginning, it has been running ever since. The Golden Joysticks continue to this day. They have, you know, seemingly done a decent job of changing with the times. They've added like award categories for personalities and streamers and esports and all of that stuff. This year, they also gave the Game of the Award to Last of Us, which, as I have here in my notes, I say, which is fucked.
The BBC is still putting this on? Is that
It's not the BBC who put it on. The first one was just hosted by somebody who worked for the BBC.
So who is doing this?
A shadowy cabal. No.
shadowy cabal.
Let's see. Who is behind the golden joysticks? Let me pull up that.
Well, because the thing, you know, we want these awards to be like the Oscars, but the things like the Oscars are put on by like actors associations, like the Actors Guild. We kind of really don't have that in video games, not officially, like not like codified. You know, we kind of do, but we kind of really don't. Not the same way that actors do and like the Grammys and whatever and all that shit. So it's, you know, worth it to know, like, who are these people putting it on since we don't really have or put any authority in our guilds and associations and whatnot.
Right. I think the Golden Joysticks, I think, is just its own organization. Let's see. They seem to be affiliated with Games Radar. So probably it's an affiliate of like Future Publishing. So that brings us to easily the best part of this entire segment. Oh my God. I can't wait to tell you guys about this.
Oh boy.
So we get to the year 1994 in America, as opposed to Britain, a show called Cybermania 94. Not a wrestling show, surprisingly, a video game award show called Cybermania 94.
Cybermania.
This set the stage for everything in video game awards that has come since. So it was hosted by Leslie Nielsen and Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
What?
Yeah. Yes. This is a real thing that happened. I skimmed through like all of it last night. It was like 2.5 hours long. Anyway, the other host, by the way, Jonathan Taylor Thomas from Home Improvement.
Home Improvement, yeah.
So, just going to read my notes verbatim here because it's really something. It began with a fake Hillary Clinton, quote-unquote, booting up the award show by pressing a key on an old computer, which then exploded in her face in a, like, Looney Tunes fashion, leaving, like, a black, you know, like, charred, I don't know, whatever on her face. At which point, Nielsen said, "I sure hope she has health insurance." Which I have written down here as a harrowing portent of the grim future to come.
Oh, God.
So anyway, additional tidbits. Chandler from Friends was there for no real reason. They had these repeated segments from the Luxor Hotel in Vegas, where they had an arcade. And there were these like clueless interviewers asking people playing arcade games questions about the games.
That they were playing? Like the games that they were playing or the games that were being nominated? Like
the games they were playing. Okay. They'd be like, "Tell me about Street Fighter. Tell me about Double Dragon." And then later on, they like were reading off these sheets of paper and giving viewers tips for those video games. Like how to unlock Akuma in Street Fighter.
Ooh.
It was like the most awkward pace-breaking thing ever. And it was so weird. At one point, one of these announcers, like as he was sort of just bumbling his way through being in an arcade, clearly for the first time in his life, was like, "These cyberpunks, I guess you could call them," about the people in the arcade.
Of course. Anyway. Oh, God. So you just broke the cardinal rule, so we have to take you out back and shoot you now for talking about cyberpunk.
Yeah, you talked about cyberpunk, technically.
No, not breaking the rules, because I didn't talk about a game, any specific game. Anyway, so yeah, interesting tidbit about this particular show, though, in addition to being a disaster. Oh, wait, that's right. It got more disastrous later on. They had pro wrestlers on stage. And during the same segment, when there were pro wrestlers fighting, there were also little people. Like, they did that kind of entertainment. The 90s, folks. So anyway, one interesting part of this particular show is that if you go through the credits, you will recognize a familiar name. Jeff Keighley.
No, really?
Yes. Jeff Keighley let's see, his title was Interactive Product Specialist. Now, this is interesting for a number of reasons, foremost among them being that at the time he was a teenager. Jeff Keighley is only in his early 40s right now, so this was 1994. He was probably 14 or 15. I did send him a DM last night asking him what exactly he did on the show. Unfortunately, he did not get back to me. Near as I can tell, he wrote some of the script.
Oh.
So is Keighley like plugged in? Like, does he have like contacts? Like, how did he get a job at 15 doing this shit?
I wish, like, I knew.
Who's his dad or uncle that works at Nintendo or whatever?
Yeah, I have no clue. I wish I knew, and I wish he would have replied to me because I might know by now. But oh well. So anyway, so Cybermania eventually evolved into the DICE Awards, which is another award show that's ongoing. It's the same organization that ran Cybermania. It just continues as part of a convention that happens every year in Vegas. And it's much more like the DICE Awards are much more like buttoned down standard awards, kind of in the mold of the Oscars. People dress up and then talk over the awards because no one really cares. But they have like celebrity comedians that host them. And it's, I don't know, it's fine. I've been to a couple of them. They don't usually air online, or at least they didn't for the longest time. Now they do. But anyway, no one really cares that much about the DICE Awards. What they do care about is, or what they did care about, was the Spike Game Awards, which evolved more or less directly out of, not directly, but like, so that was Jeff Keighley's first run at doing an award show, albeit in conjunction with Spike TV, which is no longer around. Thank goodness.
Oh, come on. Spike was great. It had that one show about
titties, probably.
Yeah.
Probably titties.
That's a pretty safe bet. Yeah. So Jeff Keighley was involved with the Spike Game Awards, which were never well received. The first one, just to give you like a little time capsule, the first one was hosted by David Spade. And featured appearances by Lil' Kim, DMX, POD, Orlando Jones, and Cedric the Entertainer.
Okay.
This is back in the early thousands, so it scans.
Was this the last appearance of Orlando Jones?
Who knows? Anyway, because Jeff Keighley could not be stopped, it also featured a full-on WWE wrestling match featuring actual stars, because Cybermania's legacy had to continue. Oh yeah, another fun time capsule. The first ever world exclusives were world Midway Games exclusives. Fear and Respect, The Godfather, The Game, and Need for Speed Underground Rivals for the PlayStation Portable.
Oh, yikes.
For the PlayStation Portable. Wowie.
Yeah, the Spike Game Awards never really were well-liked by people in the gaming community. In fact, here's a really fun bit. I unearthed an open letter written to the people putting on the Spike Game Awards by somebody who folks in the audience might recognize. His name is Jason Schreier. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an open letter to the awards back in 2011. I want to read you a little bit of it just because it's got some righteous fervor to it.
Jason Schreier?
Jason Schreier.
With fervor. Weird. Go ahead.
Dear Spike VGA producers, I get it. You've got obligations. You have to appeal to a broad audience. Your references can't be too niche or obscure. You have to keep people watching. You have to appease advertisers and wrangle exclusive deals out of game publishers. I don't envy your jobs. But after watching the 2011 Spike TV Video Game Awards this Saturday night, I can't help but wish you'd try a little harder not to embarrass the people you're trying to entertain. It's not hard to find the root of the problem here. You think we're done. You think your audience is so stupid that they'll be amused by YouTube rants and health potion gags. You think we get our jollies out of watching girls bite cupcakes off conveyor belts. Mm. You think video game references make a good substitute for humor. Worst of all, you couldn't care less about what you're showing us. You don't care about the games or the people who made them. As Joysticks Justin McElroy pointed out on Twitter, yes, Joysticks, not, you know, my brother and me's. If they don't give a shit about the awards, why on earth should we? So yeah, I mean, you get the general idea. The Spike TV Game Awards never really seemed like they cared that much about games. It was definitely very much a Spike TV show where there was a lot of kind of lowbrow entertainment. And definitely not really a show that took the idea of giving awards to games and game makers seriously. And yet, when that folded after the 2013 show, what came out of the ashes was the Game Awards as we now know them. Or at least the Game Awards. They took a little bit to kind of evolve into being this mainstay of the medium, but nonetheless, that's where they came from. So y'all know the Game Awards, Jeff Keighley, world exclusives, just some other fun things about them. Back in 2015, they had a judging controversy because almost all the judges were white men, or at least men. That has since been kind of rectified. Apparently now they're voted on by 95 media members and influencers, as well as fan votes, and then they weigh it such that 90% of the vote is decided by those media members and influencers, and 10% is decided by fans. It's a weird system, but that's what they do. They carried over the world exclusive tradition from the Spike Awards, which on one hand definitely gets people interested, but on the other hand, they're not interested in the awards.
Yeah, they're
interested in the announcements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There have been a number of oof moments from the show, including giving trending gamer to Boogie in 2016. Boogie is a YouTuber who is mostly these days known for sucking.
Mm.
Let's see.
Oh.
In 2015, also, Konami prevented Hideo Kojima from attending, leading the audience to boo Konami. And then Kojima attended every game awards until this year. But anyway, so yeah, those are the main ones. There are some other shows. The BAFTAs exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's the British Academy Games Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you want to have some oof moments about who's been honored, they honored Notch with a special award in 2012. Unfortunate in hindsight. The BAFTAs also carry the somewhat notorious designation for being the award show that Joaquin Phoenix yelled about not being diverse enough earlier this year. So keep trying, BAFTAs. And by that, I mean try a lot harder. And then to Ash's earlier point about the Oscars and kind of like who decides on them, who gives out the awards. I think the closest analog we have is probably the Game Developers Choice Awards at GDC, which are, as their name suggests, decided upon by game developers. I've attended a few of those, a lot of those actually. They're good. They're usually hosted by Tim Schafer. He's very funny. Tim Schafer, for those who don't know, is the head of Double Fine. He's a games industry funny man. They, you know, give out awards and respect people who make games. And it's, you know, for people who make games, by people who make games. It's a good show, but it doesn't really, you know, get the level of clout of the game awards because it's not, the awards aren't sandwiched between a bunch of big announcements.
World premiere.
Yeah. So anyway, that's your journey to the world of video game awards. Do you have...
Speed run.
Yeah, speed run.
Speed run.
You do your little like pew, 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 pew thing.
It's pew 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 for bullet points.
Yeah, but it can be for anything.
Speed run. Pew 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 pew.
No, you have to zoom. Okay, I'm not doing this anymore.
Speed run. Speed run. Zoom. And on that note, let's go ahead and take a light break and get back. We've determined now that video game awards are kind of dumb and pointless. So let's take a break and get to our next segment.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And welcome back to the Split Screen Annual Video Game Awards, the first annual Split Screen Video Game Awards. Those of you watching at home are not actually watching at home and didn't see Nathan almost choke on his drink just now. But it was a beautiful moment, and I'm sure it will be in the highlights. Now, we've put together the Split Screen Awards based on criteria that has been researched for decades now. We've only started doing Split Screen within the past. We've done, 10 episodes now?
Yeah.
Taking over from the original crew? But we've been researching the Split Screen Awards for a decade. Ashley Parrish only been working here in 2020. But we've had her
for most of my life previous to this. It's
exactly.
Been researching these awards.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, Ash was actually grown in a pod for this exact, for this one thing.
But before we get to the awards, let's have our first world premiere.
We have those?
We don't?
What is our world premiere?
Oh, goddamn.
You have dug us into this hole. You now have to dig us
up. It's Dragon Age 4.
I was going to say Peggle 3.
Peggle 3 would be great. Oh,
it's
my God.
Dragon Age 4 colon Peggle, Peggle 3.
Oh, my God. It's beautiful. Let's go back in time and call them and get that worked out. But first, let's go to our awards. Now, we have made up a bunch of awards. I'm not sure how many we'll get to, how much we'll have time for. But I think the most important award is the one I'm starting with first here. And that is the best game to help us forget about COVID-19. And I'm not gonna announce nominees. We're just gonna get straight to it. But do you guys have any clue which game that would be?
It's Animal
Pandemic.
Crossing.
We went two totally different directions with that one.
Yeah, you guys both suck. It's no game. Why would you want to forget about COVID-19? It's important we are aware of this ongoing pandemic, especially now when we have the vaccines being distributed. Now is not the time to try to forget about it. We have to be aware of it and see this through to the end. God damn it, video games. Get the hell out of here.
So you just opened the award show by walking us into a trap.
Yes.
To make us,
which is
bad.
Very video gamey, isn't it?
I mean,
now I'm trying to think of the best walking into a trap in a video game.
I think that would be Tenchu Stealth Assassin, or that game. What was the game where you used to be able to put traps down? Was that Tenchu?
Don't ask me.
It was Tenchu. Tenchu's best trap walking into game. Nathan, do you have an award to present to us?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a number. I have a lot of awards, actually.
Well, we'll alternate here. We'll go to you, and then we'll go to Ashley. And
all right.
Maybe that will give Ashley time to make up more than the two she has.
All right. So some of my awards go to games from previous years, because I don't think that awards should be constrained by year in a direct sense. So best low-poly animal is that dog from Ace Combat.
Oh, yeah, the flat dog. He wasn't even polys, was he? He was sprites.
Yeah, he was sprites. But nonetheless,
I haven't seen the dog. I've seen the low poly animals that everybody's talking about, like the seagulls from like Pilot Wing 64 and then the rat with the gun. But I have not seen this dog.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Best low poly animal is a tie between that dog and the rat with a gun. Rat with a gun is the representative this year needs, because we are all rat with a gun.
I think deep down inside, everybody's rat with a gun.
Because we're all plague spreaders, but we'll kill you at any moment because we keep that thing on us. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, now just like give me a picture of Rat with a gun and have like, I'm proud to be an American playing in the background.
Oh, God.
And you'll nailed it.
Oh, God. That's somebody's theme song right now.
Anyway, cool. The best regular poly animal is Cerberus from Hades.
Okay.
And I don't think you can argue with that.
Best good boy of the year.
He's a wonderful, wonderful boy.
Goodness, you people with your Cerberus.
So my one of my video game awards for the year is best emotionally manipulative moment in a Mario game.
Oh.
All right. I am on board with this level of specificity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So spoilers for anybody who has not yet finished Paper Mario and the Origami King. It's the scene where Bobby explodes so he can get a rock off Olivia, your little origami sidekick. He explodes and dies. And it's so sad because you're like, oh, it's a Bob-omb and this is a cartoon game and he explodes and he'll just come back and he doesn't come back. And you spend like the next 20 minutes in a cave consoling Olivia as she cries because her friend just sacrificed himself for her and nobody saw it coming. It was like a complete blindside. And I'm like, I'm not expecting Paper Mario game to make me cry. And I was sobbing. So thanks a lot, Mario. Well, put a trigger warning in your game next time.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no.
It's really dark.
Holy shit. I mean, it's really dark. And also just like the fact that they did it with a ba-bomb of all things.
And then you go on this long trip to figure out like his backstory where he doesn't have a fuse because he gave his fuse to one of his friends who also died. And then there's a moment later in the game where you're fighting the big bad guy and there's these ba-bombs who you've met one and you know that they have interior lives and feelings and emotions and they all just like, you shoot them out of a cannon to shoot them at these things that are chasing you knowing that you're killing them after the experience you've had. It's like so emotional, such emotional roller coaster with this fucking game. It's like, holy shit, why am I contemplating war crimes playing fucking Mario?
Oh my God, I can't follow that up with anything. I'm looking at my list going, well, God damn it. Wait, here, I'll do a quick one and then we get to a new Nathan one. The one category I have is best sexy roguelike Fahey doesn't get, but the other two seem really keen on.
Can you guess what that is?
Bullets per minute, right?
It's bullets per minute, yes. Well, very good.
Okay, there we go. Wow.
It's Sukuna of Rice and Ruin. Not a roguelike. It's Hades. I thought of you guys, and I was like, wow, I don't get this game at all, but Hades needs an award in our first awards, right?
If you haven't gotten this game yet, it's just because you're not trying.
Yeah.
I got other stuff to do.
Wow. That sounds like a personal problem.
It is. So
as long as we're giving Hades awards, I'm going to go ahead and give out Horniest on Main, which is Hades. I think that it is self-evident why the game deserves that award. Then let's see, because that was a really quick one.
Yeah, it was quick.
In a different direction, the first annual Axe Head in Remembrance of Trophy for taking an axe to the head goes to Axe Head from Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Oh, see, that one I did play, and I do. Yeah. I have the feelings.
Yeah, Axe Head was too good for this world. And so he left shortly after taking an axe to the head.
Quick question about Axe Head. You have a chance to tell him there's an axe in his head, and you cannot tell him there's an axe in his head. Mm-hmm. Has anyone not told him?
I felt like he deserved to know, so I told him.
Yeah, I told him too. I feel bad.
Yeah, I think he deserved to know. I mean, informed consent and all that.
Informed axe consent.
So my next award is best hair in a video game, and I'm gonna give that to Hades because I've been talking about your DC's damn tree afro since the moment I saw it, because I think it is a bit of inspired character design. And I think I don't know if this is actually in the game or if this is just fan art that I saw, but like her hair changes with the season. So like in spring it's like cherry blossoms, and in summer it's just like a regular tree, and then in fall it's it's got like the leaves, but in winter it has no hair, you just see the branches poking out, and I just think that's great. Hades is such a great game.
And no dookie braids.
No dookie braids.
Dookie braids. Okay, now it comes the time in the Split Screen Awards, the first annual Split Screens Awards, where we have the musical number for best song. Best song, and you can't see this because this is an audio podcast, but I'm holding this up for the people.
Oh.
There we go.
Unfortunately, the label of my record is green.
So it's kind of conflicting with this green screen.
So Zoom is screening, but it is, well, here, I will go ahead and sing a passage from this year's song as part of the musical number of the annual Split Screen Awards. Here we go. It's kind of bug and kind of snack. Try to catch them in your trap. Feed somebody and you'll see we are whatever we eat. Find them hiding in the sand, tearing up a cabbage patch. Come to Snacktooth Island and discover it's bug snacks. And this is when the symphony kicks in. Go ahead, symphony.
Oh, yeah.
Do we not have the symphony on the Zoom call?
No.
No.
Do we not? We have a fucking producer. God,
we don't have the symphony, but Fahey, there's a giant picture of a cat behind you. And so I think we're going to have to make do with the giant picture of a cat.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's
I hope that artist is having a good day. Like, I hope she has like all of her bills paid behind that song.
Cara Bonito or whatever.
Yeah, for however y'all talked about that goddamn game and that goddamn song more than the game. I feel like the song outlived the game, honestly. I hope her bills are paid.
Me too. Her but also she's a musician in the year 2020, so I doubt it.
Yeah, no bills.
This is one that I want to get some feedback on because while I have an opinion here, I don't know if y'all share it. Best bug. For me, it's the Clipping Dicks in the game that shall not be named.
Clipping Dicks? What game is that? Sorry.
Well, I'm once again being trapped by Fahey, our senior entrapment correspondent.
Wait, you mean the Clipping Dicks from Cyberpunk 2077?
There we go.
The one Nathan promised we would not talk about, but I didn't say anything about.
That's fair.
So now you both have to die.
I mainly, obviously the Clipping Dicks are Self-evidently amazing. But in addition, we got a really good headline out of them from Ethan's story, which was just, I believe, like what, everybody's dicks.
Dicks are ripping out of their pants.
Yeah.
No mention of cyberpunk whatsoever, but
yeah.
You don't have the kind to of headline, at this point.
The kind of headline that makes you say, wait, is it happening to me?
You look down.
Yeah, and you're like, oh my God.
And you're like, wow, I'm not wearing pants. Phew.
Right.
I think it's just really emblematic of everything going on with that boondoggle right now. But that's what comes out of it, like that fantastic bug where just, you know, well, show hog all the time.
There's also the T-pose when you're riding on a vehicle and your butts and you have no pants on. Yeah. I like that one as well. But it does, Cyberpunk does have some of the best bugs of the season. But here's a new award. We're just going to skip. We're skipping Ashley because she's making up new ones on the spot.
Yeah.
You are? Do you have one?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's go to Ashley first. I'm sorry. We'll not right. skip one. I thought she only had two, but I'm okay. Go. Let's go. Let's go. Do it.
It's best emotionally manipulative segment in a Last of Us 2 game.
In a Last of Us
in
2 game.
In a Last of Us
out
2.
Out of all the Last of Us 2 games, one had a spectacular moment. Go ahead.
I just really hated that sequence in the... spoilers, by the way, everybody. That sequence in the hospital where you're chasing down the friend and she's like, I'm not giving up my friend. And she's already going to, because, you know, you're in this hospital part that's like all spores and everything. And she's already breathing the spores. So she knows she's already going to die. So then Ellie just beats her to death just for no other reason. Like she's showing loyalty here to her friend, doesn't want to give her up so Ellie can enact her revenge fantasy on her. So she just beats her to death. And it's like, okay, this game can go to hell. And then the ending can also go to hell where you rescue Abby from like, and her friend Lem from getting like literally crucified by these crazy people. And then Ellie cuts her down and like, I'm not done, bitch. Let's fight. And you fight. And it's so overwrought and exhausting. I'm like, God damn, I hate this game with every fiber. I'm sorry, Last of Us 2 fans.
This brings us to our next award. Best crunch.
Ooh.
It's which game had that's the very best crunch.
Yeah, that's like a tie. That's like a five-way tie.
It's a five-way tie. I mean, when we're talking about best crunch, we're not talking about a game that came out like a normal, you know, hey, we got plenty of time to get this game out. Let's go ahead and take our time, make sure it's okay. Everybody, Bob, do you want to come in extra? No, you can't because we're just going to, you know, relax. Go see your family. That's not the type of game we're talking about. We're talking about a game where, you know, everyone was lined up for a month or more, just, you know, drilling that game home, god damn it. Because games aren't games without pain.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you still got to give it to Cyberpunk, ultimately. Like, obviously, Last of Us had very bad crunch, at least based on the reporting that came out about it. But given that Cyberpunk also resulted in a buggy, subpar experience... I think that it is both an instance of obvious crunch and a cautionary tale about how crunch can just make games worse.
But it is not the best crunch because technically the game's not out yet. They're still finishing it. Just yesterday, they told us that they were like, they're with a little post on the internet saying, hey, we got a big update coming in January and then February. And by that point, the game might be a game worth playing. So it's not finished yet. Does that mean
so we're all asking, in early access? Cyberpunk early access?
They're still crunching.
It is likely, yes.
They're still crunching. So The Last of Us, I'm going to have to give it the edge because the actual game came out and it feels like it was finished. Whereas Cyberpunk, come back to us next year for the Split Screen Awards too. And Best Crunch will probably go to Cyberpunk unless someone does something tremendously stupid.
All right. Quickly, before we move on to our last segment, let's do some very rapid fire awards.
Okay.
Let's see. The I Can't Believe I Actually Miss Crawling Through Vince award goes to Cyberpunk. Deus Ex has Vince. They're great. I miss them. It's a good way to get around, it turns out. Let's see. The Biggest Big. It's a tie between the latest Call of Duty and Medal of Honor. Call of Duty takes up like 250 gigabytes. Medal of Honor, when you first download it, can be over 300. So... but then they both shrink a little bit down to like 170 when you actually install them. So, tie.
Okay.
Anyway, that came out.
I got one. The best cyberpunk game goes to Cloudpunk, a game on Steam that I have not played, but has 1,296 overwhelmingly positive recent reviews, with 5,000 very positive reviews, and the screenshots look really pretty and shiny. And apparently that game was finished. So Cloudpunk wins best cyberpunk. Go ahead, Nathan. Continue.
I have one too. Nathan. Yeah. I have best puzzle game released this year, and it's Super Mario Picross. And it counts because it came out on the Switch Virtual Console. So it counts.
Freaking said Picross, though.
It's Picross, and I will not be answering questions at this time.
All right. Well, then, that came out this year question mark award is a tie between Doom Eternal, and this one slips in as, like, because everyone talked about it this year, The Witcher TV show.
Technically came out on
December 20th, 2019, yeah. But it became a thing in January.
I was going to jump through the screen and kill you if you tried to tell me that The Witcher TV show was this year. Oh, God.
Now, the song rose to prominence this year. And if you don't recall, the song went, kind of bug and kind of snap, try to catch them in your trap. I would just like to give you real quick, this is my last award for the evening, and it's the evening. If you're watching this in the day, stop, listen to it 5 hours later. The game of the year, Madden 20, because it had 2020 in the title. Madden 20, that came out last year, but it is the game of this year. It's really confusing with sports game. Go ahead, Nathan. Go ahead and Take us home.
All right, so... You know, why end on a bright note when we can instead end on a sad one? The Cautionary Tale Award.
Oh no!
Is a tie between Cyberpunk, obviously, and then Halo Infinite, specifically because you should never ever put the word "forever" or "infinite" or some variant on that in your name. Never works. You get Duke Nukem Forever, or something else like that, or in this case,
BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, BioShock Infinite was also delayed and ultimately came out in a not great state. Now we have Halo Infinite, same thing. Just never name your game that way.
It doesn't happen with Madden 20. It comes out the year before it was supposed to come out.
Right, like that's such a good naming scheme that it actually gets you ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. So that is our takeaway from this year's Split Screen Awards. And we hope to see you back here next year.
I'd like to thank all our sponsors, the Gillette Shaving Guy, who is a shaving razor that transforms into a robot. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take a break and let our sponsors talk about their favorite video games. But probably not. It'll just be a regular break. Be right back.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, where we have our third award-winning segment, this one by Ashley Parrish, ace investigative reporter and one of our best feature writers we've ever had on Kotaku.com. Aww. There you go, Ashley. Go ahead.
Thank you. this segment might actually be award-winning because we employ it so often that it's been around long enough to where it could have earned rewards. I'm talking about Crosstalk. Is something where we just shoot shit about our topic of the day. And our topic of the day is awards. What do they mean? Do they mean anything? Why do we invest such meaning in these things and then turn around and give them to the wrong fucking game? Nathan, I bet you have thoughts about that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So multiple things. For one, the Game Awards happened last week. The Game Awards is an online show hosted by Jeff Keighley. And they ended up giving their biggest awards to The Last of Us 2. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought Hades should have won. This started a controversy not only around the particular winner of those awards, those being Game of the Year and Best Direction, but also around the way in which The Last of Us 2 was made, because they employed a lot of crunch to get it out the door. And a lot of people said, well, okay, if we're talking about direction specifically, then isn't crunch itself a failure of direction? Because someone was saying, okay, here's how we've got to, you know, take care of everything and do everything. And here's how we need to make this game to, you know, complete it. And that resulted in a bunch of employees having to work way too much or feeling pressured to work way too much. And so, like, how can you give a best direction award to a game where direction resulted in something that many would describe as not ideal, to say the least?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that, you know, we ended up running a post on this that outlined the stakes of it pretty well. But yeah, I think that one way that awards can kind of work suboptimally is that they can legitimize things like crunch.
Mm.
Like if you look at a situation like this and say, well, the games that that people were sort of holding up as like the likely winners were The Last of Us, this game where a lot of crunch was employed to make it happen. And then Hades, a game where, according to the developers, they really tried to be conscientious of all the various like little mental pitfalls that ultimately lead companies into crunching. And then Last of Us 1, and it's like this big prestige game. Then the impression you can take away from that is like, well, you know, who cares about labor issues in the gaming industry? Ultimately, what matters is that you put out the biggest, best, AAA-est game possible.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally manipulative.
Right. And then you have, you know, that's ultimately legitimized by it winning the big award. And nobody like criticizing, nobody at least officially associated with the award saying like, hey, maybe this is not what we should be doing, not the way that we should be kind of stewarding this industry forward.
Well, then if you do that, then you lose all kinds of juicy, sweet access deals. And we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to kiss everybody's ass and stay on everybody's good side. Because right. At the end of the day, this isn't really about awards. This is about marketing.
Right. And yeah, so I mean, like
the main, sorry, the main reason we get the video game awards every year. And I just want to say this real quick is what Ash just said is it's marketing. We're here to see trailers. We could care less. You saw the opening of the awards. They had a pre-show, 30-minute pre-show. Well, they just started giving out the awards. That's a pre-show. You're giving out the awards and showing trailers. What the hell is that 30 minutes for? It was like, yeah, it's not the award show. This is not the grand spectacle yet. We're just doing the exact same thing and fitting some more trailers in there. I wonder if they get paid? Are they solicited? Do they get sponsorship deals? What's happening there?
It would be interesting to take a really deep dive look into what goes into this, who makes what choices, a real examination of how these games are voted on. Like, are these popular? Mm. Like, they're popularity contests, right?
I mean, again,
like, I'm pretty sure if Hades won for real, like a shithead over The Last of Us 2, like, the online brigade would be a little bit, you know, such as we see with Cyberpunk 2077 right now, you know? You can't piss off the gamers. You have to give them what they want.
But I mean, like I said earlier in the show, so the way that the Game Awards votes is that they have 95 media and influencer types, and then they also have online polls. And so 90% of the vote for each category is decided by media and influencers, and our remaining 10% is from online polls. I think that what The Last of Us really, or The Last of Us's victory really speaks to is the homogeneity. How do you say that word out loud?
Wow.
Jesus. Anyway, the fact that a lot of the gaming industry is comprised of people who are, you know, of similar taste and similar background.
Yeah.
And so you end up with a lot of people being like, well, of course The Last of Us wins. It's the game. It's the big prestige game. It is the closest that video games have gotten basically to Oscar bait, which is its own interesting mm-hmm. term, right? Because Oscars, unlike the Game Awards, the awards themselves serve a purpose. And I would not argue it's a good purpose, but I would argue that it is an existent one. In that, so at the Oscars, the awards themselves are the centerpiece, and the institutional prestige of those awards means that even though it's just one award show, they drive the conversation around film for like half the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when a movie or a person wins an Oscar, they're kind of set, at least for a while. Like, one of the most important things about getting an Oscar is that it guarantees you future better work. You get paid more. You get more roles. You get better, like, if you're a director or whatever, you get to direct bigger and better movies. They even, you know, decide what kinds of films get made. And so people literally spend like half the year campaigning for Oscars. You want to talk about award shows being politics. The Oscars are literal politics. People campaign to win them. So, the Oscars at least serve a purpose. Whereas the Game Awards, like we were saying, it's about announcements. The awards are an afterthought. Like, yes, there's this big production about who decides on them and stuff. And I think like Jeff Keighley really cares. Mm-hmm. But I think he like cares because he wants to believe that his show is more legitimate than it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pause there and wow. You're talking about the Oscar and Oscar-worthy moments, and it's kind of like the Oscar nominations come out, and sometimes there's a surprise, and you're like, oh, I didn't think the Oscar crowd kind of went that way. I didn't think that was the kind of movie they'd be like, oh, wow, yeah, that's the thing we'll celebrate this year. But the video game awards come out, and the nominations come out, and you're like, there's a list of the video games we thought were going to be on the video game awards.
Yep.
There's hardly ever any surprises. There's never, you can kind of guess from the nominations what's going to happen.
And I
also wanted to point out one thing about that direction award that we were talking about, the mm-hmm. best direction. Did you see who got honest about the best direction award? About the article about how it should not.
Oh, the Duke Nukem guy.
George Broussard from Duke Nukem. The game that took 30 years to make.
God grant me the fucking audacity of that guy. Like, I don't understand how you can be the guy on Duke Nukem Forever complaining about a game getting best direction. Like, sit this one out, my guy.
Yeah.
You don't understand a thing about game direction, says man who spent three decades directing game.
Self-evidently do not. But yeah, so like, I think that the other thing to consider here is that giving out awards for art in general is a fucking bizarre practice. Mm-hmm. Like you talk about, this kind of decades long quest on the part of the gaming industry to create its own Oscars. And it's like, but why? Why do we feel the need to do this? Why do we feel the need at all to give out awards to say like what the best art is when that's not really how on a day-to-day basis we even like consume art? I mean, like, yes, it can sometimes be useful to help people discover new things, but broadly it's subjective. It's personal taste. It just giving out awards like this just kind of furthers, I think, like the capitalistic ideals of competition that we apply to, a bunch of consumer products in an arena where they don't really even belong. And then, that results in an entire little tiny industry being created around like things like the Oscars. Yeah. I mean, my kind of like personal feeling on it is that it would be better if, for example, even an outlet like Kotaku, why do we do like a big, like this is our entire publication's Games of the Year post? Mm-hmm. It doesn't really ideally represent us. We then also do posts about what we individually think.
Right.
Do the individual ones. Like that's pretty much where the buck stops for me mm-hmm. with people saying like, this is the best game or whatever. It's all just one person's opinion.
Yeah, I'm dealing with an issue right now to get into the behind the scenes of Kotaku a little bit, where we're discussing our Game of the Year list on Kotaku, and there's a game on there that I had the best time this year. Look at Nathan smiling. Hey, you can't see him.
Is it Tony Hawk?
It's not Tony Hawk. Well, we can talk about both of those, but Tony Hawk and Animal Crossing, I had a great time with. Tony Hawk is Zach's baby, Zach Zweizen, on our site. And he loves the game a lot, but it's kind of a remake. It's like, why are we putting this on our list? It's the same game over again. And for me, it's Animal Crossing. This game changed, the shape of my entire summer. It changed the course. It gave me something to do. If there was a game that would help me forget just a little bit about COVID, it was Animal Crossing. And no one else played it. Nathan hates it. And
I need to jump into that.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to jump into that conversation with you to support Animal Crossing because I think it should be on the list also.
Well,
I'm with you, Fahey.
Well, the thing that happened was we argued for a bit and we have several more days to argue, but we argued for a bit. And I was like, at the end, I was like, you know what? It's going to be on my personal list. I'll be able to tell people why. And they'll look at it and they'll get my story out of it. And that in the end is much more valuable, I think, than here's a game we've just all picked by committee.
In the end, it's all personal taste.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like picking by committee just lends like an air of institutional legitimacy to something. But even then, Like, what is it really? Who is Kotaku? And why should anyone care about, like, the website as a whole's picks for game of the year when it's just basically, like, a mathematical average of what we like? Like, yeah, it's weird. And yet, you know, obviously there's a monetary incentive for a lot of companies to, you know, just some behind the scenes stuff. This time of year, a bunch of companies send out codes to tons of websites to try to get them to declare their game of the year. Why do they do that? Marketing. Mm-hmm. Because it's nice to have a bunch of awards on your game box or in your trailers and your commercials and be like, this is the game of the year. And, you know, here's a fun fact. All you need is like one website or one show to call your game of the year in any capacity. And there you go. You can put it on your box.
Yeah, game of the year edition. Here we go.
Yeah.
Several years back, there was a game. It was just like, it was one of those RPGs from Europe that's dark and brown. You get them all the way from companies like Iron Hill or whatever the hell over there. And one obscure little website called them game of the year. And then there was this game of the year edition that came out. I forget the name of the game, but you can look up Game of the Year Edition and you'll see a bunch of games. You're like, wait, how did that get? And yeah, it's really literally any small publication can say, this is our game of the year. And they're like, it's on. Let's print those new boxes. Boxes.
On that note, I'm just going to put this out into the universe and hope it comes back in a way that's favorable to us. If anyone would like to call us Podcast of the Year, that'd be really cool.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't matter how big of an outlet you are. You could start a Twitter account tomorrow and have one follower or zero followers. Just call us that so that we can then call ourselves that. And we can call this episode like the Podcast of the Year edition.
On that note, it's time to wrap things up, I think. We're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode of Split Screen Podcast of the Year.
Edition.
We should just change the name to Podcast of the Year. We can do that. Michaela, our producer, will change the name. You've been listening to the Kotaku Split Screen Podcast, award-winning podcast of the year. Starring, as always, Ashley Parrish, investigative reporter and feature writer. Nathan Grayson, hair haver and thing writer. And Michael Fahey, non-hair haver. And, you know, he's got a beard, but it's on his neck. It's kind of... I need to stop looking at myself. Anyway, you can reach us, as always, via email at splitscreen@kotaku.com and on Twitter at Uncle Fahey, that's me, at Vaughn, V-A-H-N-16, that's Nathan, and at Ad Astra, that is Ashley Parrish. Our producer is Michaela Heck. Our sound engineer is Jamie Colazzo. And both of them are the producer and sound engineer of the year. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.